Hello everybody, this is Corey from Sun System, and I'm here to introduce our second episode with Celebration Guns of the Sun Sessions podcast, where we piece together how bands, artists, comedians make their art. And this episode was tremendous conversation. We got to the crux of what they're doing, and this episode was very interesting to us because it provided us some insight towards how they use social media, how we could actually see and hear throughout this episode. You'll see how the initial song changes, and you can also see how experiences of, in this situation, opening for Explosions in the Sky actually caused the song to change almost up to the last minute. So I would urge you all to check out this entire episode. I know it seems maybe a bit long, but the content is there. Also, check out within the show notes the video for this particular single, because you can actually see the show that they played at Marquee where they opened for Explosions, and Justin does a tremendous job of bringing that into the narrative. And I applaud him for how honest he was. Him and I had talked before the episode had taped and kind of gotten to the weeds a bit about a drummer they had in the past, and he was strong and talked about that issue because it actually did play into this this song. So I just want our listeners to know that it wasn't just to drum up some kind of animosity, but it was because the song was intrinsically linked towards a transition towards our new drummer, PJ. So we thought that that was something to talk about. Justin was kind enough to bring that up. Also, I wanted to alert our listeners that it may sound kind of strange throughout this interview, and the reason being is we set up our entire studio with mics everywhere, and then our interface, honestly enough, did not have the 12-volt adapter. So imagine all this setup, and then the one thing you need, electricity, to make this all work, didn't happen for us. So we had to use one microphone in which everyone's kind of, trading it off, and we're recording our questions via cell phone. So I apologize if the audio isn't great, but I promise you that the content is, and we want to thank Celebration Guns for joining us, and Justin for putting out our EP, Strange Ways We Meet, on Lumberjerk Records. And if you are following us, we just want to keep you guys involved with the one single a month goal. We just released our January song called Sweeter Than Heaven, so please check that out. But without further ado, wow, can't speak. Here is our interview with Celebration Guns. To begin with, just to kind of start the conversation, you guys, would it be fair to say that your particular band wears your influences kind of very much on your sleeve and very openly? Would that be a fair assessment?
It might be fair to say that we wear our influences on our sleeves, but it also could be insulting. Like, maybe you're being condescending. What do you mean by that?
No, I mean, like...
No, right, I'm just kidding.
I could
no,
be condescending.
So that is a question a lot of people will immediately ask, is who are your influences? A guy last night asked me that, and I didn't know what to say. I was like, minus the bear, and then he looked puzzled. And I was like, Jimmy Eat World? He's like, oh, I saw the play at the Crescent Ballroom.
Yeah, there you go. Now we're friends.
So I think for this band, it started off as me wanting to do dream pop, shoegazy type stuff. So Our first EP, Quitter, are all these demos that I did, and there's a lot more kind of like swirling effects and space within those songs than there are with our current songs. So I was listening to Craft Spells, Beach Fossils, bands like that, and I really wanted to kind of use that influence. And then once we got a drummer in there, it's not going to be the same as the GarageBand drum loops that I put all over the Quitter EP.
That's true.
So it kind of added a new flavor, kind of started sounding more... I like busy drums. I like drums that use the toms a lot more, the floor tom, and kind of do a little bit more pounding and a little bit less like crashing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In a way, and cymbals are kind of used sparingly. And I think that's an influence, you know, that I probably pushed on to Tim a little bit. I mean, I'd already been playing with him for a year. I knew he was really good. And I think we both played that kind of style together anyway, so it felt natural. Mm-hmm. But then I just pushed a little further to make sure things were very, like, busy, not repetitive. And so I guess my influence changed at that point. The Appleseed Cast album, I can't remember what it's called. It's from a couple of years. It's their most recent one. The drumming on that is amazing, and that's really what inspired me to try to go somewhere along that route and and take that feel with it. You could say Maps and Atlases had you know, an influence, and minus the Bear. The odd thing about those two bands, though, is I feel like because we've had them thrown at us by people saying that we sound like them, I think they just have become on my list of influences, even though I didn't really think about them much while I was writing. But something can be an influence just if it's been in your life for a long time, even if you listened to it years ago. So it probably was crept in there.
Okay, so I kind of want to offshoot on that. One, I wanted to figure out when to ask this question, and I figured I might as well get it out of the way, especially since you're saying that you like Dream Pop. Does Celebration Guns come from the band Stars?
Yes, it's from Stars, and I think they still beat us in the Google search results.
Yeah.
But one day, we'll surpass that lyric video. Not even a lyric video. It's just like a picture of the album cover and the song, and it's like way above us in the results. One day, Stars, we're coming for you. No, yeah, we should be thankful they're not coming for us.
Right. Like, you took our... they're Canadian, so they won't be fighting with you anytime soon.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So I would like to actually let these guys kind of say what they considered the influences, maybe more so talking in the beginning, right? Like how we started.
Yeah. I guess what I wanted to delve in, and then I wanted individual.
Okay, cool.
And since I guess, obviously it'd be fair to say that you started Celebration Guns as a demo project, just kind of...
Pretty much. I they were demos. And then when our previous project with our mutual buddy Eric, when that stopped... Eric bailed. I'll never forgive you. I love the guy. And he's getting married today, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's right.
So I didn't really want to stop playing. And Tim was more his friend, so I felt kind of like weird bringing him along instead of assuming Eric would want to start another project with him without me, because I'm probably just my overbearing, obnoxious personality. it makes it really hard. That's a whole other thing. But I don't play as well with others as I should. Like my whole musical personality tends to like come out a little bit more than I should let it. So I don't know where things left off there, but I knew I want to keep playing music. So, you know, I told Tim I had these demos. I wasn't necessarily planning on playing them out anytime soon, but it just felt like the right opportunity to have something to keep us going. Instead of us just sitting there, at the time I was just playing bass and he was playing drums. So instead of, you know, bass and drums sitting there like trying to come up with songs, I felt like we had a starting point. And then we ended up just learning all the demos.
Mm.
And so that's kind of what launched Celebration Guns. It wasn't intended. And I always wanted to have a different singer, but that never happened. So then I just had to suffer through it for a few years until I got to a passable
point. I think that is a famous story of any lead singer. They're like, I didn't want to do this, but I guess I have to now. No one else is doing it.
It usually turns out okay.
Yeah. So I want to come back to the idea of you changing, because especially as a guitar player, the way that you guys play is very... I keep telling you this every time I see you, Chris, that the way that you guys play is very different than, I guess, be my natural inclination. And then I didn't mean that as a slight. It's just like it's interesting to me that people can approach the instrument in a different manner. So I want to hear about your influences. I want to hear about yours, Ryan. And then I want to kind of talk about the transition from you're saying like Beach Fossils, which essentially does a lot of, I guess it would be like just, they use like a lot of reverb, but not so much delay, right? You know, but very tremolo picked and or syncopated eighth notes. So I can see that in the music you make currently, but I want to see this transition away from reverb to mostly clean, with maybe a bit of delay, and I'm going to pigeonhole that for a second though, but go ahead.
Well, when I joined the band, I found Justin on Craigslist, and I listened to Quitter.
Random Encounters?
You know it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I hit him up because I listened to the songs. I was like, wow, these songs are pretty cool. And I thought Modest Mouse right away, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I like Modest Mouse.
Okay.
Nice.
And hit him up. He's like, yeah. And they had a show like a month away.
Okay.
And then, yeah, so I hit him up, said, hey, I like your songs, blah, blah, blah. He's like, okay, yeah, you can come on this day. And I guess they had people come over, and one guy left, and I was coming in, and I was like, oh, cool. And then they're like, what do you want to play? Like, him, Justin and Tim, Ryan wasn't there.
Okay.
And it's funny, because I was like, Ryan's the bassist, and I thought, what, Ryan from Morning Maxwell? Because I used to love that band in high school. And it turned out to be him. And I shit my pants, and I was like, dude, are you Ryan from Morning Maxwell? And I was like, what?
That's the honest point.
Yeah, I acted like a little schoolgirl.
That's great, man. So you mentioned you mentioned Modest Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Like, that must have intrigued you enough. But what else are you into? You know, outside of the group, and what kind of leads you to play the way you do?
I would say my favorite guitarist right now is like Yvette Young. I really love her style. Tara Melos. I grew up a lot on Tara Melos. Mm-hmm. Fall of Troy.
Okay.
Oh wow! Yeah, Fall of Troy.
Floral, just a lot of mathy type bands.
My first band I was ever in was with Justin, like full time, like actual. I play bass for this band, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started, like, I didn't take lessons. I don't know how to read shit. I just learned by ear and like playing and practicing, playing the stuff that I love. Back then it was like pop punk, like Ataris and Lesson Jake, that kind of stuff, like ska core, you know. But the way he writes bass parts is way different than, like, when I hear a guitar melody and a drum beat, I hear a bass line in my head, just, it goes along with it, and then I have to, like, translate that onto the frets, just by ear, and try to find it. And the way that my brain does that is way different than him. And so he, playing the stuff that he would write, because the way he writes, it's bass lines usually first, so playing that stuff kind of forced me to think outside, like learn shit outside of what I would normally play, and it helped me progress a lot as a bass player. And I think being in that was the only thing that actually got me prepared and like good enough to be able to be in Morning Maxwell and keep progressing. So all my early influences are all punk rock, like just from a playing perspective. I didn't learn how to play with my fingers until like in the past couple of years, and even then I'm still like kind of shit at it. So but yeah, as far as writing parts in this band, I don't have to, there's not much influence personally involved, because I'm really just taking the stuff that he's already written and like changing it to the phrasing of the drums, you know. Sometimes I'll add like little fill stuff where appropriate, if it's, you know, the parts are, you can tell the difference if you listen to the demo stuff versus the live stuff. But it's really just, I'm listening to the drums and I'm changing when I'm playing to the drums.
So you mentioned punk rock. What do you listen to, I guess, outside of it? Because I think that, and maybe you said that you really are attuned to the drums. It's got to be attributed somewhat to the music you listen to outside, that it must be like some kind of instinct. What do you listen to outside of this particular band?
A lot of stuff, but I really have a soft spot for like fat beats. Like, I love a lot of rap music, and like funk. I love James Brown. Like, if I could only listen to one artist for the rest of my life, I would probably just pick James Brown.
Well, that's interesting, because I think sorry to piggyback off of what you're saying, because like I can see that now, the fact that you lock in so much with the kick drum. Like, that's something that I immediately could pick out when I saw you guys. You guys are very tight, and I guess that could definitely come from funk, where everything's essentially a drum, even if it's a guitar, a bass, a horn.
I try to stay, like, with... It helps me keep time if I'm playing as though, like, every drum hit, I'm hitting a string or, you know, something like that. It just makes... It makes more sense to me, and it just makes stuff sound tighter, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just came from realizing after playing for forever and listening to all these
expanding my musical horizons and like being open to stuff that I didn't think I might like, you know, just listening it to it objectively. The punk rock days is just like you hammer it out and you just pedal and you go. But the funk kind of stuff, it's like if you don't do that, the song sounds really weird if the bass isn't phrased properly, or if you just try to play the parts without phrasing them properly. So just a big insight for me when I actually got into that type of music. It mm-hmm. definitely changed the way I write. But I love Bandits too. I love RX Bandits so much.
I'm about to blow your mind. I was in a band with the they have a trombone player, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the trombone player, I actually knew that guy, but I played with his brother, like, in a band before. And, like, yeah, I guess, like, I didn't realize
this. What type of music was it?
Pretty much, like, what we're doing now. You know, like, I feel like I probably made the same music for 10 years, you know. My parents were like, God damn it, when's this gonna end? No, I'm just kidding. No, it was, like, kind of similar. But his brother, I got to meet him, and I guess he got tossed out of the band for drugs or something.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, that's interesting. I can hear, I think all the music you're speaking of has a really tight rhythm section and it's more focused on the beat. So I guess I want to transition back to you. So your playing style for yourself is, would you say, very ornamental? Because the drums and the bass kind of set a strong foundation. They're locked in, they're grooving. And you're kind of the secret sauce, right? Is that kind of how you see yourself?
The special sauce.
The special sauce. But because you kind of do things that are... I was noticing even those lines that you sent us, and I wanted to, you know, eventually get to the song itself, but they're kind of in swing rhythms. Like, you swing certain notes... like a jazz musician would when you're doing slides and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love jazz, so.
Right on, yeah.
Yeah, I just love that weird timing kind of stuff, weird time signature changes, tempo changes, and yeah, like you said, the holding of the note, like that kind of threw us off on that little one part where I'm like doing a little bit of tapping and then I hold a note, but I'm holding it a little bit longer than I'm supposed to, so it, like, makes it a weird little time signature. But,
so yeah. That's what you like to play in? Like, you like to play with meter? And like, how you can break up a bar to accent certain parts of the bar? Kind of like Thelonious Monk would do, like, he'd accent certain parts.
Yeah, like, that little note is, like, a little bit accented and a little bit held out.
Yeah.
Then I like to do, like, little holds like that. Kind of throw you off a little.
Right, so and it kind of plays with the very kind of holding down a strong foundation of the rhythm section. So that you're just kind of trying to play with the listener a bit to like...
And the thing about the songs is that, like, I write in parts, so I'll just write one little part, and then I'll like, kind of, you know, play with new parts, and then it turns out it's, like, a different tempo, but it goes with it. But, and then... That's kind of how I write my songs. Like, if are you guys gonna play the?
Yeah, that'll be played. Yeah, mm-hmm. The interludes will be in there. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you guys are gonna hear that it's just in parts. Like, I'll be like, here, Justin, here's this part, and then here's the whole song, but in parts, and then he'll arrange them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
However he wants, because he's the singer and the head honcho.
So I guess to those ends, like, I kind of want to know this, and then I'll come back to Justin. So do you write just like a catalog of essentially riffs, or, you know, do you just have like this backlog of like all these things you do, or does it start with, okay, we've got this key signature, these chord sequences, and I'm going to write sections of songs, like you're saying? What comes first, the chord sequence?
Oh, okay.
Or the riffs?
Yeah, well, I usually just... And, you know, I try to, since I'm doing the tappy stuff, I try to tap a chord I like with my left hand and then find another chord that goes with it with my right hand. Then I'll tap, like, random notes and I'm like, okay, this sounds good. And then kind of think of something in my head and be like, okay, and then just build off of that.
So they are essentially a collection of individual riffs, and then you try to figure out what could actually go together? Kind of like a puzzle piece?
Well, Well, yeah, but he puts the pieces together. That's
the okay. Cool so thing. You're, that's you're, the cool you're just
I don't have to think about the puzzle putting okay. it together. I just made.
Here's this.
I just made the pieces. I shatter it for him. I'm like, here you go.
That's cool.
Put it together.
Right on. That's cool.
But the probably worth it. I didn't really play with a metronome really. I just kind of made parts up and then set the metronome after I made the parts, and it turned out, oh shoot, they're all different tempos. So that one's kind of our tricky song. But then after that, I just tried to play with the tempo, but I could change the time signature still. So I tried to force myself into playing at the same tempo, but being able to switch the time signatures, so we're still on tempo. Mm-hmm.
Chris, so how many with how you were writing it would probably worth it. How many kind of turns did it take until you finally came to that final part that you passed on to Justin? So when you start from the beginning of it and you went back and listened to the tempo of it, how many changes did you go through that until you finally passed it off to Justin?
Well, it all started on Instagram. I uploaded the main part.
I have the video.
Oh, yes.
So I can play that.
And then Tim, our old drummer, is like, oh, we should use that. And I was like, oh, cool. I am if Ryan, Justin are. And then Justin's like, yeah, let's do it. And I was like, okay, so I got to write more parts for this, okay? And then I just built off of that one little part. And like I said, I didn't play with any tempos. I mean, no, metronome, I mean.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
So it all was different. And I was like, dang, I should probably play with the metronome so we can actually play with a metronome on stage. Right. That's how we do things.
So to that, leading to that then, does PJ really play off you mostly? Because he's a guitarist as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the most part, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh no, he loves that.
Right.
He loves that. He's always like, I gotta hear you, Ryan. And so, Ryan's the same thing. Like if the drummer changes anything, Ryan's right. like, you changed that.
Which is kind of a bummer. I wish he was here to actually like speak on that. But do you both play off each other a lot more than Ryan would with like a non-conventional style?
I would say a little bit, yeah. Sometimes me and him just like look at each other, like, yeah, we're feeling it, yeah.
Right.
And I'm like, I get you.
So what kind of guitar, I guess, is PJ, like what kind of guitarist is he? Because I'm sure that does play into how he plays drums as well. I know we're speaking for someone who's not here, but I'm saying
metal.
Okay. So does
he's a riff master.
Riff master. So would you say that translates to how he plays drums? Is that a Ryan question? A rhythm section question? Or because like
or Justin, because
maybe Justin, it kind of plays into your business.
Hey, it's me.
It's the lumber jerk.
Yeah.
What was the question again?
Do you remember?
The answer is
what type of drummer is PJ?
What type of drummer? Okay.
Or I guess how does it because you're saying he's a metal guitar player.
Oh, you were asking about PJ's influences how that translates from guitar influence to drums.
Right.
How it plays. I think he's very direct and hard hitting, and he'll hit accents in good ways mm-hmm. that we appreciate. It's kind of a newer thing, I think, for us to really feel more dynamics in the drums, but he'll hit a certain part super hard and intentional, and I like that, and that feels like a metal thing to me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, that is something. If he had bothered to show up, he could have. Just
DJ,
kidding. No, he apologizes. He wasn't feeling well, but
a lot of us were.
So he'd probably answer that better, but I can see an influence in his guitar playing with our music. If you really look at it, it makes sense.
Yeah, because I say Dave Grohl, obviously, coming from the drum set to being in the Foo Fighters, he plays a lot of drummers, actually, that are guitar players, and I'm sure it goes the opposite. Are always looking for how to get dynamics out of the instrument and accenting, and so it's interesting that you're seeing that, but I guess he's not here to speak to that, but yeah, it is what it is. So I kind of want to go back to the idea of how the typical songwriting process. You talked about originally you started out as a demoing process where you essentially laid out everything and then kind of pieced it together with a live band. I guess since then, because that was that period of time, what does the typical writing process look like? Run me through that.
Well, the writing process actually did stay the same up until about a year ago before we started using Chris's tapping guitar riffs. So even up until a year ago, I was still putting a whole song together, structuring it, writing the guitar parts, writing the bass, the vocals. And there were even occasions where, like, the drummer, Tim, our old drummer, he had to learn GarageBand drum loops because some of them were just so specific to how I wrote the song that there really isn't any choice. Like Folks Inside, an old song we had, there's this really cool drum thing, but that was just from GarageBand. So I would either have GarageBand drum loops or I would bang it out. I have a cajon. Now, this is really a weird way to do it, but I have a cajon in my house and I'll just record it like live in the room with like brushes, and I'll try to kind of pound it in a way that you hear a distinct bass and snare type of sound, and then I'll put some distortion on it, and that just gives an idea of a beat. And I'd say most of the times that idea is there within it. Every time Tim and PJ would put their own flair on it, absolutely. You know, if I'm just getting an idea of a beat, it's never going to necessarily be the exact same, especially when I'm playing it versus, you know, a specific GarageBand loop.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So okay, so you'd have it fully fleshed out.
Oh, right, yeah. So it was fully fleshed out, and I would present it to the band. I would send parts ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So I'd send the bass to Ryan, guitar to Chris, and then I would send the whole demo to everyone. So whoever's drumming can listen and be like, okay, this is the vibe, mm-hmm. the gist of it. And then we'll probably end up working that out more live, you know, actually planning out, like, hey, feel free to run with this drum part, but can it be something like this? So that's really, the drums are the only part that sort of gets more fleshed out during practices. The rest is already planned out, except for, well, I mean, even with our new songs technically, but in back in the day, it was just stuff I put together for everyone. And then when Chris's riffs were introduced, the difference would be I would use those as an inspiration to write, because I felt like maybe I was having writer's block around that time. And it just seemed perfect to have these riffs that I could organize and write bass parts to, which was usually would come first. Sometimes I try guitar, but that's a lot scarier. And one reason we didn't do finger tapping until a year ago is honestly kind of like my own insecurity. Like, I don't finger tap. So I was like, for one thing, I don't know if this means I need to learn how to finger tap or how I'm going to fit normal guitar parts in with that. And I also didn't want to become pigeonholed as a tapping band. Like, I think it's a really cool thing, but it seems like most bands that do it, that's like their only thing mm-hmm. for every song. So I wanted to keep it mixed up. So I was a little weary of using that, but now wary. I hate when people do that. But I think it really gave us, we kind of expanded in a different direction with these five songs that we've done with Chris's influence in there. And how I've done my writing a lot over the years with this band is finding some kind of new sound or instrument to give me some ideas. So there's the song we have with like melodica. I've written songs based around melodica parts. There's that tiny instrument song that we play with Eric that has all the bells and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, the little piano and everything. And then I got a mandolin with the sole purpose of just like trying to find new inspiration. And then we wrote like a song that we really like from the new album that we usually close our show with mm-hmm. from that. And a couple other songs too actually are out there with mandolin that we might incorporate. But I do feel like when we bring out the mandolin, it shows, get some raised eyebrows from people, you know, depending on the type of show we're at.
Yeah.
But it usually works out. So I mean, there's a lot more to like how, I mean, this song has a pretty big story to it and how it all came together. I mean, this is a part of it, like, you know, using Chris's riff and everything, but mm-hmm. I don't know if you're getting into that yet or if there's,
If you feel like you've touched on kind of your typical process, because I wanted to, maybe you brought up a bit of it. Well, anyway, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, so go ahead with the beginning of the initial inspiration.
So the song came about at kind of a strange time in our history, our time as a band. So we had just put out this EP that took way too long to put out, so it was kind of our focus for over a year, the Me That Used To Be. We got that put out in April of last year. And our the first thing we did was take the money we made from the show and just go on like a kind of a pointless tour up to Portland and back and play two shows in 5 days. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And so then we get back and it's like, well, what's next? I don't think we had really written a lot of newer stuff. We had a couple of things, but we were at a point where it's like, where are we going to go from here?
And I was kind of having writer's block. I wrote a few kind of strange songs for us. We ended up playing a show last June where like half the set was songs that we never played again, which is strange. And they had like heavier, noisier stuff, like kind of screaming parts. Like it was way different. I mean, I don't think the three of us really thought it was bad. I mean, I think we had fun with them. They probably come back someday. The thing with our drummer at the time is we had had a conversation a few months earlier where we were like, all right, dude, are you in the band or not? Like, he kind of had a thing over the last year of being a little flaky. I feel like I had to really drag him to do a practice or a show or like make him be invested in the band. And that
who's, who's this person?
This is Tim. That's Tim O'Brien, the previous drummer that we had. So he said he wanted to be in the band. He wanted to do it. So we stuck with it. And then I was kind of starting to get that feeling again, especially with these new songs. I had a feeling maybe he wasn't that into them. The first two shows we played after our release, which I feel like our release was a huge success. And then our very next show is at Shady Park. And like there was all these technical difficulties and there's like three people there. And then there was the Yucca show with like the weird songs we never played again. So it was like a strange transition time for us. I was feeling optimistic, like we'd figure it out. So what had happened is, you know, Chris posted that riff on Instagram, and he's the one who suggested we use that. He's basically the reason why the tapping came into the band at the time it did, because I saw him comment, like, we should use that. And Chris is like, well, yeah, if Justin and Ryan are down. And I was like, no, Chris, this is my band. I was kidding. I was like, well, I mean, it was a really good riff. I think what he said in his, I guess it'll be in the show notes or something, but yeah. His note was something like, he's been listening to a lot of Mike Kinsella lately. So I guess it was American football-y-ish. And it was a lot slower than we ended up using it. And I thought it sounded awesome. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just make this happen. Like, put aside the insecurities and the fears, and like, let's try to see how I can make a song out of riffs. So I commented and I was like, all right, dudes, next practice, next week, we're going to play it. And then I set my goal to have everything planned out within a week, and I worked hard on it, and I felt really good about everything. At the time, I thought the vocals I wrote for it kind of reminded me of this band Tiny Moving Parts. I don't know if that's true at how they turned out, but that's what I was feeling when I wrote it, and the finger tapping probably had something to do with that. But it turned into this nice epic song. You know, there's like five different parts in it, and it seemed to all go well together. There's like a section in the middle that was sort of like just for people who like listening to music that goes off on a weird tangent, because it kind of doesn't really fit with the song as much, but we like it. So the practice came about, and Tim was about to go on a month-long trip to Europe. But he was leaving like that Saturday, and this was maybe Tuesday. So he texted us and said, you know, I just got to really prepare for my trip this week, so I'm not going to be able to practice. And I'm like, this is typical Tim stuff. Like, I was so irritated. So we sadly tried to like learn the song together without drums. That can't happen because everything else is already written. Like, we know the parts. We learned them all. He wrote his own. It's just to make it a song, we need a drummer there to like progress it. So we tried, and it was even more frustrating because like we failed at getting it written. I'm like, man, this was going to be this huge. I was so excited about the song. And then I saw later that night that Tim was like out at a bar or something during his preparation for his trip. So I was like, this isn't feeling good. I was pretty mad. A couple days later, we were at a party at a friend's house, and PJ was there. And we were just talking about the band and venting, you know, about Tim flaking. And I was like, you know what? Maybe you should be our backup drummer. And like, while he's out of town this month, would you be willing to come and play drums so that we could just get this song written? And, you know, if he ever flakes on a show or something, then you could take his place. And for some reason, he was okay with that, like just being a backup guy. I mean, that I guess that speaks to how he felt about the band, which is really cool. But so the next week we went in and we had the song and we told him the gist of it. And it was almost like his audition in a way for the band was him writing parts, which is very weird. If you really think about it, like auditioning someone and they're like, we're like, here's a song, write drums over it. And he took it in the perfect direction of what we needed. It's probably different than what Tim would have done. Not that that would have been bad necessarily, but it ended up where it's at because of PJ's flair on the drums. And I think I feel like he has had the most creative input of any song. And he has a lot in all the songs, but in this one in particular, it feels very PJ with like the way he came up with stuff. We gave some very vague ideas of what we wanted, you know, on drums maybe, but a lot of it was him. And I thought that was cool that we kind of wrote it all together. I mean, you know, Chris had his parts and combined with mine, which is a totally new thing we haven't done. And it felt risky, but I think it was a great introduction to this turn that our band took musically a little bit. So Tim, he got back from his trip to Europe or wherever and sent an email and was like, "Hey guys, I was going to tell you this sooner, but I didn't want to ruin my trip, but I'm quitting the band." So I'm like, wow. And I didn't feel great. Maybe I'm kind of a jerk, or I just hold people to too high standards. I actually absolutely do, especially my friends. And he was a very close friend of mine, and I felt like all this behavior was really disappointing. And maybe some people would have let it slide and not yelled at them publicly at the Rebel Lounge back patio after one of our shows. But it, you know, stuff like that builds. And you guys are in a band, and you know all the little things. Think about, you know, 2 years later, every guy in the band is still doing the annoying stuff that you can't stand, and they're getting worse and worse, and just like really holding the band back. I mean, if that happened with one of you guys, it'd probably be Lorenzo, but if it did happen, just kidding. He is a drummer after all. He is a drummer after all. No, but it builds. Just like with anyone in your life who kind of takes advantage of you or doesn't really respect you, like it builds up. So that's where that went. And I never publicly said anything about it. He said very public, mean things about me on his Facebook page, but I decided not to. So this is as close as I'll come. But I will just say, when there's band responsibilities and friendship and it's mixed in, things can feel really personal. And I think that's where that went. And I don't like being taken advantage of by people. So that took a huge turn, obviously, for the band, because now Tim, his personality is all over our songs and he's out. So we felt pretty confident PJ could kind of pick up where he left off with some of our older songs. And we're like, okay, hey, let's just take a few months, write some more songs. We wrote another one called Better Days. It's going to be on the new album as well. We got all those together, and I will stop here to say, Chris, I'm glad he brought this up, because he did send the parts in different tempos, and I didn't think to look at the tempos. So I just wrote it all out, and then I'm like, PJ, set your metronome, and he's like, it was a huge struggle. And it was not his fault at all, but it felt like a bad omen in the beginning, kind of like, oh man, we can't make this work. But then I realized, well, I just put the song together and didn't even consider tempo, and now I'm trying to tell him to play to a click. So those two songs I mentioned, that is the issue with both, is that they don't have consistent tempos, so we can't use a click live when we play those. So obviously that's including the song we're talking about today. So that plan to take months and write more stuff changed when we got the email asking us to play Explosions. The title of the email was literally Explosions in the Sky 826. It was a date. And I'm like, I don't know what this could possibly be about. Is he advertising directly? And then all the text said was, "You want to open?" I was like, this is the kind of email like every band wants to get. Like some huge show. How is this possible? And then I'm like, oh my God, we just almost broke up a month ago. Like we're starting from scratch. And now we have this show. I'm like, well, yeah. We talked about it. Like, what do we do? We don't want to ask Tim. We don't want to, because Tim loves Explosions. And I was just feeling bitter, and I didn't want to ask him. I didn't want to give him that opportunity to play with one of his favorite bands. But we had to do it. We're like, we can't pass this up. So we came up with this plan. PJ, you're going to play the two songs you know. So that means, for some reason, we decided it was a good idea to introduce a brand new song with a new drummer at Marquee in front of like 1,400 people. So, but we're like, we want our new identity to be in there. Yeah. So we're going to have PJ play those two songs, and then Tim will come and play the rest. And we had to play like 45 minutes, which we're more comfortable in the 30 range. But we, you know, we got through it. And the cool thing about the Explosion show is that actually changed the song completely, like the intro. So how the song originally started was, I guess we were just going to like kind of chug in on some like heavy chords, like, and then the song kicks in. And then all of a sudden I had this thought on the stage in front of all these people, just a silence, and then us like just chugging these parts. And it never even really felt like we nailed it either. Like it didn't sound that cool when we would do it. So I was like kind of terrified of like starting our set that way. So I thought, well, this is an Explosion show. So how about I do some like real like drawn out post-rock sounding instrumental thing. So it is like about a minute. And I just started with like a I guess a D played on two different chords, kind of like that sort of sound of just like the same note, but on two different strings, I mean. And then just built on top of that and added layers and got the bass in there. And then suddenly we had an actual introduction, and the whole purpose of it was to open for Explosions. So that song really shaped what we are as a band now, because it was the first song that Chris had the writing input like that with the finger tapping. I mean, we shaped it to fit a certain show. We were changing our identity as a band. I mean, we weren't the dudes with Tim, because that was a very specific time. Mm-hmm. This doesn't feel like that at all. It's different. I mean, it's a different vibe, and we're in a new place. And I think this song was really instrumental, like the introduction to us making that transition.
Dudes.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it's about, isn't it about a minute and 40, I think, before vocals kick in?
Right. It might be a minute 40 before vocals kick in.
Because I guess is coming from like a pop background, I'm like, you know, it totally fits the, and that gives me a little more insight about why, and that was the first tune that you're leading into in that very big show. Mm-hmm. And is that what you guys open with now?
It has been an opener a lot of times. It's the first song we'll play. It just feels like a good opener, but then sometimes it feels like, I don't know how the crowd's going to be. We have another opener that we'll go to if we want more energy.
So kind of the shifting towards, I wouldn't say like, you're not, it's not a control being lost, but was there like a kind of, was it hard to take ideas from bandmates initially, like to kind of, you're kind of not maintaining the full control. You said you were going through writer's block at the time, so you're probably trying to grasp at straws and any idea will do. And this has obviously changed in the past year to, this is kind of the more the standard process, it sounds like, right? To at least,
I'd say if the question is, are we going to go that way for all of our songs? Probably not. Okay. Because I ideally would do like a song with Chris's tapping and then a song that doesn't involve tapping, and it's just kind of like its own thing, and keep that mix going. I wouldn't want to do like four tapping songs in a row. I want to keep it divided. So it'll be democratic in the sense that I still want to get those riffs and write some songs with it, but I'm sure there'll still be some, like, I mean, I do have a backlog of songs I've been wanting us to learn. So, I mean, it easily could work on one of those. And obviously that's back to the old method. So I don't know if it's changing, only in the sense that we're adding Chris's guitar parts to the mix, and that is changing things a lot for the better, I think.
I guess the initial question, and I guess I didn't vocalize it clearly, is do you feel like you're losing control?
Oh, right. Yeah. You trying to stir some things up? That's Corey.
Drama.
I hate Chris now. I hate him so much because he took the band from me. He does all the fancy tapping. And I'm so jealous. No, like, honestly, I know that tapping's not something I can do. I don't even know if I want to put in the effort to learn it. I think it's great to have, just like when everyone was like, Tim is so flashy and crazy on drums, or, and people say about PJ too. So they kind of have a spotlight there, and I want everyone to have their thing. And I feel like we kind of do all have our own way of like standing out. Yeah. Like Chris's finger tapping and effects, and Ryan's just like hip shaking. I once referred to him as Mr. Wiggles on social media. I don't know if he appreciated it. Yeah. And then there's me doing my thing. So I think it all kind of works together. I don't feel like there's a loss of control, and it's more of like gaining more ideas. I mean, I honestly, not to even belittle his guitar parts, but I was like, this is the new mandolin. Like, this is the new thing that's going to help me come up with more ideas for songs. Mm-hmm. And it feels much better. I like the idea of us all contributing, and maybe it sounds a little authoritarian the way I've done things in the band, but it's just a matter of having things planned out, and it's just easy. Mm-hmm. You know, like, because you could get in a situation where, I mean, finding someone who's going to play exactly what you want them to every time you show them a part, it's like really tough. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to deal with that. I mean, I've been in bands that absolutely are democratic all over the place, and I've done a lot of different ways, but this is like the fourth band I've done where I kind of just like orchestrate everything, and I think this worked really well, and Chris's tapping is the cherry on top. So I can honestly say, even though maybe it'd be more exciting if I said I was actually mad, and I honestly can't even say that I didn't want his tapping for a reason where like I wanted control. It was just, I was just, like I said, I was just kind of scared that like it wouldn't work out, or it would change things in a bad way, and I wouldn't be able to keep up, really. So that was it. It wasn't a control thing, and I still feel like I'm probably pretty in control of things still. Like, it's not like a question, but
if Ryan or BJ ever said, hey, here's a part, let's write something, if they showed up and they did that, I would do it. It doesn't happen. And it's just because of the way because of the way things have gone. And it's not even their fault. It's because that's how this band has been, is we just learn stuff that I bring. But if they did that, I'd be willing to try to see if we could pull it off. But I do really like that Chris is a lot more of a principal part of putting these songs together as well. So
Chris pretty much, to say he takes a lot of that pressure off you now, and you can explore more experimental approaches to writing now. So like you said,
yeah, exactly. And it stretches me as a guitar player, and I honestly don't feel like I'm an exceptional guitar player. Not being modest, it's just it's not my natural thing. I rely on kind of riffs and effects pedals. Mm-hmm. So I think having Chris's input there changes a lot, and it challenges me to say, how do I write a part around this crazy finger tapping thing? Like, you really have to sort of stretch it. And some are just like, there have been some he sent where I'm just like, I can't do it. Like, I have no idea what to do with this. So it challenges me, and it kind of changes the style and structure of our songs by having the tapping in there. So,
I want to talk about lyrics. I think that you and I have discussed that they come in very late into the process.
Cheers.
It's just like the last podcast we had Nick crack the beer.
It's like the loudest
crack. I heard that because I heard the...
Yeah. I gave the raw...
So we'll add that to that as well?
No!
it's sad to admit to people who take lyrics really seriously, but it is the last thing I think about in any song that I write. There might be like one or two where there's a big inspiration that I took it into it, but usually what happens is I get all the music there, I'm like, okay, you know, and a lot of people say they do this, but you know, a melody would be la de ba da doom doo, and I'll usually have some dumb lyric in there. Sometimes it's hard for me not to put some goofy lyric in there. But a lot of times there'll be at least one that sticks, and I'm like, I can't change that. It has to be these words because that's all I can hear there. So I have shaped entire songs lyrically around like one phrase that I accidentally said. I mean, that's happened.
Yeah.
Our latest single, Where You've Gone, that was like the thing I said, I'd like to meet you where you've gone. And then I just based the whole song around a friend that we lost. So in this case, I felt like I was a little more inspired when I wrote the lyrics. Like I felt a kind of a direction because the song is about being in a band. And at the time I was feeling, we had done that tour. The song is really based around us doing that tour and like whether that was worth it or not. We just kind of blew some money and didn't really get anything out of it. Like that's touring for a lot of us. But it was just, you know, we are dudes in our 30s that are just playing music and spending money on that and spending our time. So is it worth doing? And I kind of explored that. And I think the answer to that question was yes. But when it ends, will we feel like we gave it all that we had? I like that line because that's a very good question that will come up sometimes, like in a band, like, well, it's going to end at some point. Like, hopefully we did everything we could to make it
worth it, probably.
So lyrically, that's really what it was. I was thinking a lot about just being in a band and that little tour that we went on and the album artwork for our full length, which is called Probably Worth It. Mm-hmm. That's the name of the full length. And the album artwork are these two pictures that I took while we were on the road that I just thought looked really cool and kind of reflect all that. So it was, as I said, it was a turning point for us as a band, and it just kind of made sense to have those lyrics and that idea put out there right at that moment. So kind of it all came into place, which is pretty rare with lyrics fitting into like a song that as I was writing it, like I'm usually not thinking of an idea or a concept at all. I'm just thinking about the song. But in this one, I was kind of like, getting a little nostalgic and thinking about what it's like to be playing a band, and that's what our music video is all about as well. I did want to mention that because it's what happened with the video is we basically were like, how much footage can we possibly have to work with for a 5-minute song? You know, to just like, so it ranges from a bunch of us playing in the practice space to that marquee show that we played. To our brief stints going to San Diego for like one night. Mm-hmm. Eric Thompson, the married guy as of tonight,
love Eric.
The feedback he gave me was, you guys are road warriors. And I thought, you're being a smart ass because you know we're not. You know we don't go on tour that much. So I'm like, do people think we're saying that we're just like touring all the time and like all crazy on the road?
And then like the guy who's recording this, Alan, was like, well, you know, in the story you're telling, like you got to the point where you're playing Marquee too early. You should say it to the end. I'm like, no, I wasn't. We're not trying to say like this is our meteoric rise to fame. And that's, I feel like that's probably a misconception from a couple people that's seen it. And just to clear the air, it was literally just like, how much footage can we work with to make this a video? This is what we have. We recorded ourselves driving around. We didn't use barely any of it. We put a GoPro facing us, being goofy in PJ's vehicle on our San Diego trip. But if you watch that video, it is being in a band. It starts mm-hmm. with us loading all the stuff in, all the work that goes into that, just playing in different places. And I think it captures it, and that's really all we wanted to do, is just kind of show, like, hey, day in the life of playing in a band.
And it's probably worth it.
And it was probably worth it. The video was probably worth it. It's probably worth it. Yeah.
So I guess I want to shift, unless there's anything else you guys want to talk about with the actual songwriting piece, I want to shift to the studio. So talk about who you work with, because you guys work with one person in particular, right, on that particular film?
Yeah, he was there last night. His name's Alan Leggett, and he really likes you guys.
That's good.
So he wanted to come see you, and then he digs Citrus Clouds too, so
nice.
That all worked out. But yeah, so that's another interesting thing that really plays into this song and getting PJ, because he knows Alan. He recorded his band Flying Scorpion, their album, with Alan, and we were like, hey, I mean, you've only been playing with us for a month, but let's plan some studio time. You know, we only had like 1.5 songs ready. So we did that. And I mean, you know, PJ was very new, and it was probably a lot between like the Explosion show and then going into the studio. But I think it worked out. There was like a nice raw feeling to it. And the thing, we did these 3 songs, and then 6 months later, we started on the other 7. So there's a little disconnect. So we did Probably Worth It. And then Better Days, which is the other one that was kind of had timing stuff because I didn't know about the tempo or how to use like a metronome. And then Move On, the mandolin song. Those are the 3 that we did then. And that's like really all we had for new songs at the time. And then he's been really great to work with. He'll spend hours. Right now we're in the process where it's like, maybe we should spend less hours nitpicking every little tiny detail of the song, because we're in the mixing. We're final mixing phase. And it's like, I listened to this today and I felt differently about it than I did yesterday, so let's change this. And then next day, like, oh, that change didn't work. Like, we're trying to get out of that and really get this finished up, like, in the next few weeks. I'd like to order. We're going to do vinyl. I'd like to get all that ordered and everything by the end of 2017. So we're coming up on that. But Alan's been, he's been great. I mean, he sat patiently while we, like, argued about metronomes and why doesn't the song sound right? Well, it's in different speeds, and you're trying to play them at the same speed. So that's one problem. So he was patient with that, and he, you know, he has had some production input. He loves adding different sounds and effects to all of our songs. He'll have ideas for, not necessarily like, maybe you should make this part shorter, because we come in and just record it as it is. But he'll have good ideas about layering something or adding like a new, like a vocal part elsewhere that wasn't there before. So he has had some great input. He has a lot of patience, and he's just a really nice dude. I've spent, honestly, over the last like 4 to 5 months, I've probably spent almost every Saturday or Sunday, about 12, sometimes 14 hours, just sitting down with him and like going through the mixes and obsessing. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to have that opportunity. But, you know, people, you see 2 different sides of it. Some people will say, like, no, we just need to get in there and knock it out and not obsess over everything else and just let it come out how it will. But we have very distinct, specific things going on with our music that I feel like needs some time. I'm terrified to do another full length. If it wasn't with Alan, or either way, you know, I'm sure by then we'll be putting more money into it. And that scares me, because we can't just go, you know, 30 days mm-hmm. in a studio and expect to not go completely broke and then some. So it's really, he's worked with us on that kind of stuff and been very generous with his time. And he's really talented. He knows music theory. He's got a good ear for stuff. I mean, it's been great.
Terrific. So, when do you guys think the full length's going to be out?
Full length, we're hoping, will be out in the spring. I mean, we're going to order the vinyl. We expect that to take a few months. It'll probably end up being like April or May, where kind of the timing it was for our last release. And we're going to, you know, do the works, the vinyl, cassette, CD, putting it out ourselves, and, you know, Lumberjerk. I guess technically is putting it out too. So that'll be probably the second Lumberjerk release, unless someone sneaks in there before then.
So actually, what are your plans with Lumberjerk going forward? So now that it's a new thing now. So.
Lumberjerk Records, which I guess I should say, and just being on a podcast, like actually explain it. It's a label that I'm doing. I had started putting out some tapes back in 2015 under the name St. Joseph, and switched the name to Lumberjerk, and it felt more like me. And the first thing we did was release a compilation with 12 bands, including Sun System, these lovely gentlemen that are interviewing us today, and then ourselves, these lovely gentlemen that are being interviewed today. Our son's on it as well. And then from there, I really like Sun System. I'm not just saying that because they're sitting here looking at me, but I actually really do like them. So the second release of Lumberjerk Records was the CD that, you know, as of the time of this recording, was last night, was released. That was great. I want to find bands that I really feel strongly about to put out their individual releases. The next compilation will probably be a little bit more widespread with different bands that maybe even if I don't love every single one. And that's the thing, I haven't talked to really anyone yet that I feel this way about, in case I have talked to you. I'm not talking about you, but I can foresee having more songs on there that maybe I don't feel like they're my favorite thing in the world, but I believe in what they're doing, or it's unique. And the next compilation will be more like that. It'll probably be twice as many songs and a bigger spread. I think the only two bands that'll be repeated on the next comp will be like official Lumberjerk bands. So us in the room, basically. Our whatever singles we have at the time will be on there. And then a whole bunch of other bands.
Single a month.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
so I know you'll have a single at that time.
Yeah, we'll definitely have
one. So there's like just a band that I really believe in. I mean, I don't know. I don't have the money to full on put things out for everyone or do vinyl for people, which would be great. Mm. It's hard enough to do it for ourselves. But we earned that money. It was not necessarily like Daddy Justin is paying the way for the vinyl. Like we worked to save up for this. So we're pretty excited about that. But yeah, I guess I don't have any grandiose ideas about the label, but I'd like to support bands that I like. And I mean, through this process, I think maybe you guys, putting myself in your shoes, maybe you felt good about somebody like wanting to support your music. And like, it's a good feeling, even if it's just like, in the end, you're like, oh, it's just Justin. Like, he's our friend. We hang out. Like, it's not, you know, it's not like some like super rad dude who's like legit. It's just like this guy Justin now. But I mean, it's still cool to be asked. So that's what I'm trying to say. Like,
absolutely.
To disconnect that, and for someone else to be able to feel like that too. Like, hey, someone actually cares. Maybe it's just this dude with like 76 likes or whatever on Facebook. I mean, he actually cares about what we're doing. And I would feel really flattering for someone to approach us that way too. So I hopefully that's a positive thing, is
absolutely
other bands feeling like that. Like, people care about their music. So if something I'm doing can make other bands feel good, like I'd like us to feel good, then I think that's worth it.
We definitely appreciate you guys, of course, and not just saying that because you're here, but obviously it's been a long thing for us to kind of put it together until last night, obviously, so it's huge.
Yeah.
So on the topic of local, who's on your radar right now that you think everybody listening should really be listening to?
Oh man, nice! Like you gotta play favorites. Well, definitely Sun System. All the bands on the comp that we put out, I mean, are great. So check out Straight Outta Comp.
Yeah.
One just recently, I've been listening to some of their new singles, but I've also known them for a while. There Is Danger. They're really cool. I like what they're doing. We're playing with them. Well, we played with them on December 10th. So I like them a lot. We like Strelitzia. I mean, they're on the comp, but we saw them the other night.
And
Ryan first told me about them, which is rare for Ryan to be like scouting local bands. But he brought them to my attention.
It's because they played Time Out.
Yeah, and Ryan's always at Time Out Lounge, so I saw him there. Do you guys have locals you want to rep, or pretty much what we've already said?
Twin Ponies.
I was trying not to say bands on the comp, but yeah, Twin Ponies are good buddies of ours for a long time. And I'd say checking out that comp is a good starting point to hear kind of what we're into. I think most of the bands on there, we all would agree, are pretty sweet. So you can get that just going to the Lumberjerk. It's facebook.com/lumberjerkrecords.
Perfect. And it will be on the blog as well.
I had like 17 more links. Should I stop? No. And let you guys. No, I'm just kidding.
You told me before.
Okay. HTTP
/.
Number one. I think that's it. It's a nice privilege and opportunity to be able to talk to you guys about this song. And
what you're doing is what I was just talking about. You're making us feel like our music is worth something and important and interesting for someone to hear about. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. I mean, for a musician, for anyone to put it out there that, hey, what you're doing is worthy and I want to know about it. It's mm-hmm. just amazing. I mean, I'm sure we all dreamed of being able to spend time having anyone just wanting to sit there and listen to us explain our songs, because it is a really personal and a cool thing that we really only share between the four of us. So appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, you labor over it, so it's
thank you. Yeah, thank you so much, guys, for doing this and taking time. And I hope that Justin's. I hope Justin's like, nah. He's like, this motherfucker's like calling me an autocrat. And he's,
no, I mean, I already know, so don't worry about it.
On several